Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Cabot Ann Christofferson is the liaison deputy director of the Myrona Project at the Sanford Underground Research Facility and is also an instructor in the South Dakota School of Mines Chemistry and Applied Biological Sciences Department. The Myrona Demonstrator Collaboration Project began in 2010 with growing clean copper to build the experiment. Cabot Ann Christofferson is the featured speaker at this month's Steam Cafe at Hay Camp Brewing Company tomorrow evening. Cabot Ann spoke with SDPB's Kara Hetland about the project and its future.
The Myrona demonstrator just requires such an unusual experimental setting. It requires ultra-clean materials in all aspects, and that's from the shielding that's going around the experiment all the way down to the tiny wires that connect things inside of it. And it's because we're looking for this extremely rare decay process that's not only hard to observe, but very rare. And so that's called neutrinoless double beta decay. So back in 2010, actually, underground at Sanford Lab, we constructed an electroforming laboratory where we would begin growing the copper that would be used inside this experiment. So we had to start very early. We didn't even start building the experiment until 2012. But this copper, what we wanted to do is produce the lowest background, or well, in a sense, the cleanest copper in the world that could be used as the shielding material, the connectors that go on to the detectors, just everything, every screw, nut, bolt, and then also electrical components that would go around germanium-76, which is what we're observing for this rare decay process. So yeah, it's been a long time since we started that. We grew copper for over 5 years. We grew actually almost about 5,000 pounds of it.
Wow.
2,000 pounds are actually in the experiment. Some gets lost in the machining process, and then some was saved for other things. But it's just amazing to think how long it took, because it grows at only a millimeter a month. So we had to produce a shield that was almost 2 inches thick inside for the detectors, and then actually the vessels that hold the detector. So all of that was done over that time period.
Wow. Okay. So the experiment is built. It has been created.
It is. It's been done since April of 2016. So we've been taking data. And what we did was kind of a modulated approach. So I mentioned the germanium-76. That's our source of what we're looking at for this decay process. And so we took data in stages. You know, the first time the germanium detector was connected to an electronic source surrounded by the copper, we observed it and took data all the way to the time when it's been constructed and put into these, basically a canister that's under vacuum at liquid nitrogen temperature. So it's at minus 321 degrees Fahrenheit. But we've taken data along the way. So we've seen a detector by itself, a detector with multiples. We've seen it in the canister under vacuum. We've seen it go into the shield, this massive shield that has not only copper but lead and polyethylene plastic. And then finally the shield was constructed, and so everything was completely done in April 2016. And so it sits quietly down a mile underground for various reasons, taking data.
Talk me through where it's located underground.
So we're at the Davis campus. The Davis campus, for the reason that Ray Davis, just right down the hallway, is where he had first observed solar neutrinos. That cavern, that section of the lab, is actually where the LUX experiment was located, mm-hmm. which has since been taken apart, and then LZ will be put there, which is just a larger scale of the dark matter experiment. We have three lab spaces there. We have the detector room, which is where the detector actually sits. It basically looks like about a 12 by 10 by 12 cube. And then we have an ultra clean machine shop where we machined all this copper that we grew. And we have another room that's back there that is surprisingly, it's called the electroforming room, but we didn't do that there. We had to start the process so soon that we built another lab for that, which has since been decommissioned. But just to give you an idea, in this detector room, when you look in, to it. You see a lot of electronics. You see a glove box, which is an ultra clean environment for where we could build all these things in an even cleaner environment than the room. But this large, you know, silver cube, it's hard to imagine what it is. It's like this large onion of layers protecting those germanium detectors from not only the radiation of the rock, which, you know, when we say radiation, doesn't mean that it's bad, but noise that's coming from the earth. And then we've gone a mile underground into this lab space to protect it from the noise that's coming from outer space passing through our universe and through the earth.
People don't really have a concept on how noisy it is.
Well, right. You would not be able to do this experiment on the surface of the earth because we have so much just cosmic radiation and energy that's passing through our solar system. So we have to go underground to shield ourselves from that. And then we simply have to shield ourselves from the rock, you know, the walls, and even people. Even you yourself, you're generating radiation in the form of just the elements that we ingest in ourselves. So you're shielding this experiment from everything, dust, people, just the environment in general.
So you have been taking data for a couple of years.
We have.
And
yeah.
What have you found?
Well,
what are you seeing?
So what we've seen is that our backgrounds, we are the second lowest background experiment in the world, but the number one is GERDA in Europe right now, but they have about 2 years more data than us. So we still are taking data in this process. We just had a big release of our data at a conference called Neutrinos 2018. It was in Heidelberg, Germany. It was a big reveal, and we're very happy with the data that we have so far. But of course, more data means more information to look at. But in a sense, what we're looking at is these germanium-76 atoms, as they decay, can we see this rare event where the neutrino mass is conserved? And so I know we're getting off on physics, but just to give you an idea, so beta decay is when a proton or when a neutron decays into a proton and an electron, and you also have a neutrino that's emitted. So then there's an even rarer form of decay where you have double beta decay. So you have two neutrons that turn into two protons, two electrons, and two neutrinos. So then the next step is to see if you have this beta decay, can you have two neutrinoless double beta decay? And what that hopes to prove is that you understand why there's more matter in the universe than antimatter, because we don't understand. In the standard model of physics, there really just should be energy left over after the Big Bang. But the neutrino might hold that secret. If it's both its own particle and antiparticle, we should be able to understand that better if we see this rare decay process.
And what will we gain from understanding that better?
Well, you understand better why the universe is here. Why is there matter? Why is there more matter than antimatter? Because if they were in equal amounts, which is would be explained by the standard model of physics, there shouldn't be any matter here at all. It should just be an afterglow of energy.
Now, you've been involved with this from the beginning.
Yes, from the very beginning. Yes, I was the first scientist underground, actually at Sanford Lab. That was quite an eye-opening experience to go underground in 2010. They had, just the year before dewatered and gotten the 4850 level ready for construction of science. And I went down there with two other scientists. We delivered some of these detectors to put them there and shield them to get ready for this experiment. And so I have seen the whole construction process of the lab. We built the electroforming lab, which ran for the 6 years. I watched the construction of the Davis campus and the Lux experiment. And we laugh because Lux built an experiment, ran an experiment, and took it apart in the time it took us just to even build ours because of the extreme requirements that we had to go through. We had to build everything underground, so every piece of equipment, every machine tool, everything came underground, went into these clean environments, and then was assembled by a large amount of scientists. We're over 100 scientists from across the world, but everyone traveled here and stayed in lead and went underground and worked long hours to put this together. And then as of, 2016, everyone just really sits and waits as the data is taken, and then they analyze it. So that's done off-site. But there's still a presence. The School of Mines, my group, we maintain the presence down there every day, making sure that things are running properly, just really kind of tending it as it's running. And then the exciting thing in the process is that the electroforming lab, we disassembled that since it was at a different section of the underground. And we have since, within the last few months, been restarting the electroforming in the lab it was meant to be, not for the Myrana demonstrator experiment, but for the next phase. So Myrana will eventually be done taking data, but those detectors will then go into a bigger experiment, which is called the Legend 200 experiment. We'll come together with that Goethe experiment I said earlier, and we'll build a bigger experiment, because the more germanium we can have, then the more data you can observe, and we're going to need the electroformed copper for that. So it's really exciting. So that just started just this last month in June, as a bath came online, and we are starting to grow the electroformed copper again.
Again. Wow.
Just to give you an idea, the copper, when we reform it, when we grow it, we've taken the highest purity copper that you can buy on the market. It's called 5/9 copper, 99.999% oxygen-free, high-conductivity copper. So, I mean, this is what's used in the electronics industry. They draw wire with it. We turn around and take it, and it's 10 to the minus 15th. In fact, you can't, you have zero, past the decimal place, you'd have 9 9s. That's how clean it is. We're measuring at the parts per quadrillion scale. So most people think about like parts per million or parts per billion, talking about drinking water. We're at parts per quadrillion. It's just unreal to recognize that we can even measure something so low. And that's one of the industries that has sprung out of this. You know, you've been underground, and we always get lots of questions about, well, what is this good for? What, why are you doing this? And the thing is that you just, basic research, you get so much of a benefit for all types of industries out of basic research. So just because you may not have found what you were looking for doesn't mean that some other industry won't benefit from the progress that you made. And that's things like this. Because of the Myrana demonstrator experiment, to keep up with measuring how low background and clean this copper is, that whole process of chemistry has evolved to be able to show that we did this. And at the beginning of the experiment, back in 2011, they couldn't even measure how clean it was, because there just was no method to detect that.
How open do you have to, do you really have to change your thinking to be open to discover new possibilities? Or is that a science mind? Anyway?
I would think that's I think everybody's a little different, but I definitely have seen myself just be amazed at what we can accomplish. When people come down and visit the lab, I kind of forget how incredible it is, because I go down there all the time. So you kind of miss out on that eye-opening experience the first time you went underground, whereas now I go down all sleepy in the morning, and maybe I want to be out where the sun is shining. But every once in a while, you do get that glimpse of, I can't believe we did this. I mean, we built a ship in a bottle, in a sense, and the amount of information and new things that we have had to develop to tackle challenges is just incredible.
And when you take this information out to the general population, what kind of questions do you get?
Well, the why? I get good questions. I have to say that I think the best questions I love are always from children, because they do have that curious mind, and they do, they do wonder. And I feel like, sometimes people lose that as they maybe think about, well, why are my tax dollars going to this? And you just have to understand, the Department of Energy's Office of Nuclear Physics, National Science Foundation, particle astrophysicists, you are training the next generation of scientists. So not only are you training the next generation of people that, you know, can help advance science, but, you know, society does reap a benefit from this, whether it's in the medical field or in supercomputing. These things do matter, and you do see these things make a difference. It just might not be exactly what you set out to do, and it might just not be instantaneous. I always love telling a story about, you can go back and look at Nobel Prizes and the work that was done, and things like nuclear magnetic resonance, which is a method that you can use magnets to look at atoms and molecules and how they're constructed. And the scientist that actually discovered it at the time was like, I don't know what it's going to be good for, but we did it. And that's the whole basis of the science of an MRI. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you ask anybody in the public, you've probably had an MRI. And you have to think back of all the work that was done to understand how to even build that instrument. So it may not be instantaneous that you learn something, but you are progressing science and society forward by this research.
Cabot-Ann, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cabot-Ann Christofferson there speaking with SDPB's Kara Hetland. Christofferson is the featured speaker at the monthly Steam Cafe. That's tomorrow at 6 p.m. at Hay Camp Brewing Company in Rapid City.